Today, your super savings are shrinking. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is post covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In this week's market review, we will, as always, look at the US first, cross to Europe and Asia, and end up with the local Australian summary, bearing in mind that our market pretty slavishly follows those in the Northern Hemisphere, which, by the way, had an up day on Thursday and a down day on Friday. Volatility continues to rage across most asset classes, and this is now having real-world consequences on our superannuation or pension benefits, which in Australia are forced by the government. As we'll see, the losses are mounting up. But first, it was a bad end to a wild week, with US stocks dropping on Friday as worsening inflation expectations kept intact worries that the Federal Reserve's aggressive rate hike path could trigger a recession while investors digested the early stages of the earnings season. The previous day, the stronger-than-expected inflation data showed inflation remained stubbornly high, and this shocked the market into a volatile rise. But in the last session of a volatile week, equities opened higher, then reversed course after data from the University of Michigan showed consumer sentiment improved in October, but inflation expectations worsened as gasoline prices moved higher. The median expected year-ahead inflation rate rose to 5.1%, above the 4.7% seen in September. A climb in inflation expectations is a closely watched metric by the Federal Reserve, and it comes just a day after data showed worse than feared inflation pressures. Yesterday, you had this amazing, powerful intraday rally that was completely wrong, said Phil Orlando, Chief Equity Market Strategist at Federated Hermes. Then you look at the Michigan numbers this morning, that's consistent with what we're seeing in the economy, and the stock market now is down to reflect that number. That's correct. We see drivers of disinflation on the horizon, most notably from a reversal in vehicle prices and a downshift in medical services, Morgan Stanley said. Risks, though, are tilted towards more Fed tightening this year, they added. And a government report showed that the pace of sales at US retailers was unchanged in September from August, as rising prices for rent and food chipped away at money available for other things. The report was worse than economists anticipated, but showed some remaining resilience among consumers. The value of overall retail purchases were little changed in September, after an upwardly revised 0.4% gain in August, according to data from the Commerce Department. Excluding gasoline, retail sales were up 0.1%. The figures aren't adjusted for inflation, though, and 7 of the 13 retail categories declined last month, according to the report, including a drop in receipts at auto dealers, furniture outlets, sporting goods stores, and electronic merchants. The value of sales at gasoline stations fell 1.4%, reflecting cheaper fuel prices, but now they're climbing, of course. And for the year to September, retail sales were at 8.4% versus the 9.4% registered in the 12 months to August. Retail sales are a major indicator of consumer spending, which accounts for about 70% of US gross domestic product. And US mortgage rates, meanwhile, climbed to 6.7%. That's the highest level in 15 years, as Fed rate hikes cause borrowing costs for home loans to swell. And so, of course, the housing sector is easing lower now. Fed officials have been largely in sync when commenting on the need to raise rates. And St. Louis Fed President James Bullard said in a Reuters interview that the recent CPI data warrants a continued front-loading through larger 3/4 percentage points, although that does not necessarily mean rates need to be raised above the central bank's most recent projections. The main thrust for the market right now is higher rates, higher inflation, and the Fed is going to continue to move its Fed funds target higher, said Anthony Sambalin, Chief Market Strategist at Empress Financial. The narrative that we're seeing is that peak inflation is not evident yet, and that's depressing the market. Odds now favour that the US economy will slip into recession within the next year, with economists expecting the labour market and demand will become casualties in the Federal Reserve's inflation battle. The probability of a downturn over the next 12 months stands now at 60%, up from 50% in September, and double what it was just 6 months ago, according to a recent Bloomberg survey. The latest poll was conducted on October the 7th to the 12th, with 42 economists responding about the chances of a recession. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 1.34% to 29,634. The S&P 500 lost 2.37% to 3,583. And the Nasdaq Composite dropped 3.08% to 10,321. Friday's decline marked the 37th time the S&P 500 recorded a gain or loss of at least 2%, compared with only seven such sessions in the whole of 2021. And for the week, the Dow gained 1.15%, the S&P 500 lost 1.56%, and the Nasdaq fell 3.11%. And by the way, the S&P 500 is down almost 25% on the year, while the tech stock barometer Nasdaq has plunged 33%. Major Wall Street banks, meanwhile, kicked off the quarterly earnings season in earnest with mostly better-than-expected quarterly results. Analysts now expect third-quarter profits for S&P 500 companies to have risen just 3.6% from a year ago, much lower than an 11.1% increase that was expected at the start of July. JP Morgan Chase & Co. rose 1.66% after reporting better-than-expected third-quarter results, as rising interest rates boosted net interest income, which offset weaknesses in investment banking revenue. Citigroup and Wells Fargo also reported better-than-expected quarterly results, but Morgan Stanley bucked that trend as weaker performance in its investment banking business weighed on results. The message I got from them is that things are looking pretty good from an economic perspective, despite the challenges, but they increased loan loss reserves just in anticipation that you're going to see some more slowing, said Brian Jacobson, senior investment strategist at Allspring Global Investments. Apple was down 3%, with Microsoft Corporation, Alphabet, and Meta all down more than 2%. United Health gained 0.63% as one of only three Dow components to move higher on the day after the health insurer posted better-than-expected quarterly results when raising its annual forecasts. Kroger Co. shares dropped 7.32% after the supermarket chain said it would buy smaller rival Albertson Companies in a $24.6 billion deal. Albertsons fell more than 8%. Tesla slumped 7.55% following media reports that the electric vehicle maker has put on hold plans to launch battery cell production at its plant outside Berlin due to technical issues. And Wells Fargo cut its price target on the stock to $230 from $280 a share, citing worries about the impact of higher interest rates. The price cut comes just a week ahead of the electric automaker's third quarter results, which should come out on October the 19th. Treasury yields climbed, with the 10-year topping 4% as the odds of a 0.75% Fed rate hike for November are now pretty much fully priced in. And of course they rose after the Michigan report. The yield on the 10-year Treasury, which influences mortgage rates, rose to 4.02% from 3.86% shortly before the report came out. The yield on the 2-year Treasury, which tends to track expectations for future Fed action, rose to 4.5% from 4.4% just before the report came out. The Federal Reserve's one-step-forward, two-step-backs fight against inflation is costing oil more dearly than the market optimists would want to admit. Crude prices were actually down as much as 7% on the week, giving back about half of the past 2 weeks' gains after the latest readings for US retail sales and inflation showed the central bank was barely winning its year-long battle against price pressures. The global growth outlook remains a major downside risk, also said Craig Earlham, analyst at Onya, pointing to new lockdowns in China, the world's largest crude oil importer, which has been fighting COVID flare-ups after a week-long holiday. With labour markets remaining tight and inflation stubborn, further downgrades could be on the cards, Earlham added. New York traded West Texas Intermediate was down 4% at $85.58 per barrel, and for the week it was down just over 7%. US crude benchmarks rose 17% over the prior 2 weeks in a powerful start to October, after a 12.5% drop in September and a 24% loss for the third quarter. London traded Brent oil settled down 3.29% to $91.66 per barrel. Brent has risen 30% over the prior 2 weeks. The global crude benchmark was down 11% in September and has dropped 22% in the third quarter. And of course, the strong US dollar is stealing every bit of safe haven shine out of gold, for example, leaving the original precious metal with very little luster. Gold's benchmark futures contract on the New York COMEX settled at $1,648.95 an ounce, down 1.7% on the day, after a session low of $1,646. For the week, it lost just over $60, or 3.5%. The spot price of bullion, which is more closely followed than futures by some traders, was at $1,645 after a lower tumble to $1,640. The weekly drop in gold was the metal's worst since a near 4% drop during the week of early August. Gold broke below the key $1,650 support on Thursday before bulls in the space lurched out as the dollar tumbled on talk of peak inflation in the US helped the yellow metal recoup virtually all that it lost on the day. But gold selling resumed on Friday as the dollar index rose for a seventh time in 8 days. The index, which pits the dollar against the euro, the yen, the pound, the Canadian dollar, the Swiss krona, and the Swiss franc, reached a session high of 113.30. Technical charts indicate it could go to 120. The dollar and yields have been the chief beneficiaries of the Fed's campaign against inflation as the central bank hiked interest rates by 300 basis points this year and looks to add another 125 before the end of the year. The run-up in the two has been an anathema to gold, which has struggled for months to reassert its safe haven standing as funds flowed steadily to long dollar and short bond positions at the expense of the yellow metal. With inflation seemingly so stubborn, it may need to go further than markets previously anticipated, said Craig Earlham. That doesn't bode well for gold in the near term. Yesterday's lows around 1,640 could soon be tested once more, with the late September lows the next test after that. And by the way, some are calling a low of $1,300. In Europe, markets were higher after British Prime Minister Liz Truss abandoned a planned cut to corporation taxes, scrapping a key part of an economic plan that set off weeks of market and political turmoil. The pound and the British government bond prices rose in anticipation of the policy shift, but they retreated after Truss gave a rather nutty and short news conference on Friday, which underwhelmed analysts. This followed the decision of UK Finance Minister Kwasi Kwarteng to cut short his trip to Washington and head back to London late on Thursday, with the Bank of England set to end its emergency bond purchases on Friday. He was replaced by Jeremy Hunt, a Rishi Sunak supporter, as the next new Chancellor. Undertaking a U-turn that is forced doesn't really give the impression that Liz Truss is driving forward with a credible policy plan, but rather reacting to developments as they unfold, which itself doesn't engender much confidence, said Richard Maguire, head of rate strategy at Rabobank in London. As Truss spoke on Friday, gains made in anticipation of the corporation tax U-turn faded. The 30-year gilt or bond was up a massive 6.98% to 4.861, while the 10-year gilt rose 5.29% to 4.416, and the 2-year was up 3.89% to 3.9405, all higher than before the mini-budget in September, lifting the cost of government borrowing and, of course, UK mortgages, which have risen between 2 and 3% in the past month. This is going to sting. The pound fell about 1.32% against the dollar and remains 0.6% below its pre-September 23rd levels. Investors and analysts said the reinstating of a previously scheduled corporation tax hike did little to resolve the challenges the mini-budget had originally introduced. Paul Dales, chief UK economist at Capital Economics, called Friday's move a mini-U-turn, noting that there were still £25 billion of unfunded tax cuts remaining, down from £45 billion in the original plan. Without further changes, the Office for Budget Responsibility, Britain's fiscal watchdog, will say a £43 billion hole in the public finances will need to be filled to put the debt-to-GDP ratio on a falling path in 3 years, he estimated. And focus also turned to growing political instability, with the fourth finance minister in as many months appointed in a country grappling with a cost of living crisis and some questioning how long Truss herself could stay in office. Markets are potentially seeking out a hard reset back to square one. Like we've seen in Greece and Italy, the market can force a change of leadership if necessary, said Janus Henderson portfolio manager Bethany Payne. In the end, the DAX in Germany traded 0.67% higher to 12,437. The CAC 40 in France rose 0.9% to 5,931. The UK's FTSE climbed an anemic 0.12% to 6,858. In corporate news, TomTom stocks fell 6% after the Dutch navigation and digital mapping company released its third quarter results, while Ashmore stock fell 2.6% after the investment manager saw its assets under management slip by $8 billion in the first quarter as geopolitical and economic uncertainties led investors to shy away from riskier bets. Credit Suisse stocks rose 0.5% on reports in the Spanish press that the Swiss bank is considering selling its stake in Madrid-based tech company Allfunds to raise cash. And Temenos stock fell 20% after the Swiss banking software company issued a profit warning saying its customers have become more cautious amid macroeconomic uncertainty and rising costs. Now, in Asia, China reported a spike in COVID-19 cases, including in Shanghai, the country's financial capital, threatening new lockdowns that could severely crimp demand. Data on Friday also showed that while Chinese CPI inflation grew as expected, factory gate inflation remained subdued in September, indicating continued weakness in the manufacturing sector. That said, share markets across Asia were swept up in a global rally on Friday as investors digested a hotter than expected US inflation print that triggered that turbulent session on Thursday on Wall Street. Japan's Nikkei 225 closed at 27,090 for a 3.25% advance, which would mark its biggest one-day gain in 7 months, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng closed at 16,587, up 1.21%. But the Hang Seng is still down about 5% this week, following steep declines in major technology stocks on fears of new US curbs on Chinese chip supplies. Chinese stocks also recovered from recent losses, with the Shanghai Composite Index up 1.81% to 3,072, but the index ended the week lower as major semiconductor-exposed stocks logged heavy losses after the US blocked their access to key technology. Other tech-heavy exchanges in Asia also bounced back from sharp losses this week. The Taiwan-weighted index jumped 2.7%, while the South Korean KOSPI added 2.3%, but both indices were still set to end the week lower, with the Taiwan index down nearly 4%. And Taiwan's Semiconductor Manufacturing Co., the biggest chip maker in the world, slumped over 9% this week on fears of curbs on its shipments to China. The firm also gave cautious signals on its future prospects while logging a large jump in its third quarter profit. Now in Australia, the S&P ASX 200 advanced 1.75% on Friday to 6,758 in a broad rally that lifted all 11 share market sectors higher. Over the week, the benchmark index eked out a 0.1% loss. The sharp declines in equities throughout September may have already priced in high rates and the Fed's 75 basis point rate hike in November, said Tina Teng, analyst at CMC Markets. A bit of hope in there, I think. The energy sector led the market with a 3.8% gain, benefiting from an increase in oil prices overnight. Beach Energy climbed 5.6% to $1.60, and Santos firmed 4.4% to $7.80. UK exposed financial stocks Virgin Money and Janus Henderson rose on reports the UK government may reverse parts of its tax-cutting plan. Virgin Money firmed 9.5%, and Janus Henderson gained 6.1%. Shares in Qantas dropped 3.2% to $5.80, following its day earlier half-year profit guidance. Baron Joey upgraded its price target on the stock to $7.40 from $6.60, while Morgan Stanley reiterated its overweight rating on the airline. Financial stocks extended this week's gain to 3.1% as the sector further benefited from a rebound in margins, as reported by the Bank of Queensland on Wednesday. BOQ was up 1.58% to $7.73. Commonwealth Bank rose 0.8% to $98.90. ANZ added 0.4% to $25.36. Westpac firmed 1.9% to $23.50. And National Australia Bank jumped 1.6% to $31.08. Now, UBS upgraded its rating on the discretionary sector to overweight and downgraded consumer staples to the same rating. The broker also upgraded technology, media and telecom shares to overweight. Pockets of the share market are underestimating the strength of the Australian economy, they said, which is set to avert a recession thanks to the resilience of consumer spending, at least according to UBS. While there are growing fears that the Reserve Bank's rapid-fire interest rate rises will spark an economic contraction, UBS economists dispute this. The broker believes that equity markets are pricing in purchasing managers' indices that would be outright contractory, around 45 points, whereas the S&P Global Manufacturing PMI for Australia was 53.5% for September. The 50-point mark separates expansion and contraction. However, UBS says that its third-quarter Australian consumer survey indicates that households will stay resilient in the face of higher rates. And UBS also drew comparisons to the RBA's comparatively more aggressive tightening cycle in 1994, which did not lead to a recession in Australia. ASX-listed equities moved 16% higher the following year and produced an average annual return of 11% in the five-year period following 1994. Australia was actually in recession from 1980 to 1991. As such, a period of rapid monetary tightening does not necessarily guarantee a severe economic downturn, they said. Despite gloomy press headlines and continuing challenges from supply chain constraints, input cost pressures, and more recently labour market shortages, the reality is that the end demand, which ASX businesses are seeing, continues to be undeniably firm, they said. The strength of the Australian economy and the resilience of its consumers not just runs counter to many forecasts, but also runs against the slide that we've seen in the cyclical sectors of the equity market. So UBS believes that the RBA's smaller than expected 0.25% percentage point rate rise last week signals that the peak cash rate is in sight, and the broker has been unmoved in its forecast that a terminal or peak rate of 3.1% will be reached in December. Now, while the local share market was battered in the first half of this year by rising bond yields, equities should feel less threatened by rates because the RBA's final rate increase will take place in just 2 months' time if UBS is right. But forecaster Baron Joey predicts a shallow recession if the RBA follows market pricing for interest rates, and of course many others are forecasting much higher terminal rates. Now, UBS argues that following the end of the RBA's previous tightening cycle, 10-year Australian bond yields were an average 70 basis points lower 6 months later and 143 points lower 12 months on. And the sharp decline in cyclical stocks that are exposed to the local consumer and housing sectors suggests that they are already priced for a recession that won't happen. The share price moves seem overly pessimistic and present an opportunity to buy into some high-quality businesses with solid medium-term prospects, they said. The broker's more constructive view on the Australian consumer prompted it to upgrade the discretionary sector to neutral and downgrade the consumer staple sector to the same rating. And UBS also upgraded technology, media and telecom shares to overweight following the decline in valuations in the sector. And the broker expects Australian equities to remain range-bound over the coming months and stuck with its year-end target of 7,000 points for the S&P ASX 200. This might be a courageous call, given that the Aussie fell to 62.03 during the week and could fall even further. And what's more, Superfund returns are falling deeper into the red as traditional diversification strategies fail and a worsening inflation picture keeps the pressure on global central banks to push through aggressive interest rate increases. Superfund performance continues to slide, forcing investors to make tough choices as traditional diversification strategies fail and inflation becomes a serious problem for the first time in 30 years. Returns for the average balanced superfund, which aims to balance risk and return, has slipped to an average loss of nearly 5%, with the worst performers losing 11% during the past 12 months to the end of August, according to analysis by research group Rainmaker. This compares with the 2021 record return of around 15%. Only one of the total 102 balanced superfunds earned a positive return. The performance of fixed interest returns such as bonds or fixed income, traditionally less volatile than shares, was even worse, averaging losses of around 9% during the 12 months, according to Rainmaker. This is a pretty scary time, they said. After a decade of record returns, markets have turned on the dime and produced a horror year. Equities, bonds and cash are going nowhere. There seems to be nowhere to turn because the normal refuges are not working. Added to this is record inflation. It's back with a vengeance. And the impact of inflation on the lifestyle of a retiree without a wage or salary to supplement their income can be dramatic. And even modest rises make it harder to maintain lifestyle. For the past 30 years, inflation has been surprising on the downside. This is no longer the case. Even if retirees spend less on discretionary items, they will still need to manage inflation to afford the lifestyle they desire. The average retirement, by the way, is 24 years. So this is potentially a long-term problem. And finally, Bitcoin continues to languish around $20,000, with some commentators suggesting further falls in the weeks ahead as it tracks the main equity markets. It was last at $19,188, while Ether was at $1,297. So if you stand back, you can see all of these cross currents continuing, the increased volatility, the concern about inflation. And I think that UBS is overly bullish with regard to the Australian markets. And certainly, if you look internationally, recession is definitely coming more and more into focus. So the question does become, can we avoid it here in Australia? And if we do, what are the implications? But if we don't, then stocks will, of course, fall a lot further. Hang on to your hats. This is going to be a continued bumpy ride, not just for a week or two, but probably for the next 4 to 6 months. And I still think by the end of the year, the ASX 200 will be somewhat lower than where it is today. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.